Hello everyone, and welcome to another reading by Magic Books. It's Kev and I'm back again today to read you another wonderful chapter from Chicken Soup for the Soul by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. It's another great chapter for you today. Really powerful, really inspiring, and I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to get straight into this one because I would like to talk for a little while afterwards. So wherever you are, I hope that you're relaxing, that you're chilled. If you're at work, I hope that you're having a coffee break and that you can really settle into today's reading. Carpe Diem. One who stands as a shining example of courageous expression is John Keaton, the transformative teacher portrayed by Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society. In this masterful motion picture, Keaton takes a group of regimented, uptight, and spiritually impotent students at a rigid boarding school and inspires them to make their lives extraordinary. These young men, as Keaton points out to them, have lost sight of their dreams and ambitions. They're automatically living out their parents' programs and expectations for them. They plan to become doctors, lawyers, and bankers because that is what their parents have told them they are going to do. But these dry fellows have given hardly any thought to what their hearts are calling them to express. An early scene in the movie shows Mr. Keaton taking the boys down to the school lobby where a trophy case displays photos of earlier graduating classes. "Look at these pictures, boys," Keaton tells the students. "The young men you behold had the same fire in their eyes that you do. They plan to take the world by storm and make something magnificent of their lives. That was 70 years ago. Now they're all pushing up daisies. How many of them really lived out their dreams? Did they do what they set out to accomplish?" Then Mr. Keaton leans into the cluster of preppies and whispers audibly, "Carpe diem, seize the day." At first, the students do not know what to make of this strange teacher, but soon they ponder the importance of his words. They come to respect and revere Mr. Keaton, who has given them a new vision, or returned their original ones. "All of us are walking around with some kind of birthday card we would like to give, some personal expression of joy, creativity, or aliveness that we are hiding under our shirt." One character in the movie, Knox Overstreet, has a terminal crush on a gorgeous girl. The only problem is that she is the girlfriend of a famous jock. Knox is infatuated with this lovely creature down to a cellular level, but he lacks the confidence to approach her. Then he remembers Mr. Keaton's advice, seize the day. Knox realizes he cannot just go on dreaming. If he wants her, he is going to have to do something about it, and so he does. Boldly and poetically, he declares to her his most sensitive feelings. In the process, he gets turned away by her, punched in the nose by her boyfriend, and faces embarrassing setbacks. But Knox is unwilling to forsake his dream, so he pursues his heart's desire. Ultimately, she feels the genuineness of his caring and opens her heart to him. Although Knox is not especially good-looking or popular, the girl is won over by the power of his sincere intention. He has made his life extraordinary. "I had a chance to practice seizing the day myself. I developed a crush on a cute girl I met in a pet store. She was younger than I, she led a very different lifestyle, and we did not have a great deal to talk about. But somehow none of this seemed to matter. I enjoyed being with her and I felt a sparkle in her presence, and it seemed to me she enjoyed my company as well. When I learned her birthday was coming up, I decided to ask her out. On the threshold of calling her, I sat and looked at the phone for about half an hour. Then I dialed and hung up before it rang. I felt like a high school boy, bouncing between excited anticipation and fear of rejection. A voice from hell kept telling me that she would not like me and I had a lot of nerve asking her out. But I felt too enthusiastic about being with her to let those fears stop me. Finally, I got up the nerve to ask her. She thanked me for asking and told me she already had plans. I felt shot down. The same voice that told me not to call advised me to give up before I was further embarrassed. But I was intent on seeing what the attraction was about. There was more inside of me that wanted to come to life. I had feelings for this woman and I had to express them. I went to the mall and got her a pretty birthday card on which I wrote a poetic note. I walked around the corner to the pet shop where I knew she was working. As I approached the door, that same disturbing voice cautioned me. What if she doesn't like you? What if she rejects you? Feeling vulnerable, I stuffed the card under my shirt. I decided that if she showed me signs of affection, I would give it to her. If she was cool to me, I would leave the card hidden. This way, I would not be at risk and would avoid rejection or embarrassment. We talked for a while and I did not get any signs one way or the other from her. Feeling ill at ease, I began to make my exit. As I approached the door, however, another voice spoke to me. It came in a whisper, not unlike that of Mr. Keaton. It prompted me. Remember Knox Overstreet. Carpe diem. Here I was confronted with my aspiration to fully express my heart and my resistance to face the insecurity of emotional nakedness. How can I go around telling other people to live their vision, I asked myself, when I'm not living my own? Besides, what's the worst thing that could happen? Any woman would be delighted to receive a poetic birthday card. I decided to seize the day. As I made that choice, I felt a surge of courage course through my veins. There was indeed power in intention. I felt more satisfied and at peace with myself than I had in a long time. I needed to learn to open my heart and to give love without requiring anything in return. I took the card out from under my shirt. I turned around, walked up to the counter and gave it to her. As I handed it to her, I felt incredible aliveness and excitement, plus fear. Fritz Perls said that fear is excitement without breath, but I did it. And do you know what? She was not particularly impressed. She said, thanks. I put the card aside without even opening it. My heart sank. I felt disappointed and rejected. Getting no response seemed even worse than a direct brush off. I offered a polite goodbye and walked out of the store. Then something amazing happened. I began to feel exhilarated. A huge rush of internal satisfaction welled up within me and surged through my whole being. I had expressed my heart and that felt fantastic. I had stretched beyond fear and gone out onto the dance floor. Yes, I had been a little clumsy, but I did it. Emmett Fox said, "Do it trembling if you must, but do it." I had put my heart on the line without demanding a guarantee of the results. I did not give in order to get something back. I opened my feelings to her without an attachment to a particular response. The dynamics that are required to make any relationship work, just keep putting your love out there. My exhilaration deepened to a warm bliss. I felt more satisfied and at peace with myself than I had in a long time. I realized the purpose of the whole experience. I needed to learn to open my heart and give love without requiring anything in return. This experience was not about creating a relationship with this woman. It was about deepening my relationship with myself. And I did it. Mr. Keaton would have been proud, but most of all, I was proud. I have not seen the girl much since then, but that experience changed my life. Through that simple interaction, I clearly saw the dynamics that are required to make any relationship and perhaps the whole world work. Just keep putting your love out there. We believe that we are hurt when we don't receive love, but that is not what hurts us. Our pain comes when we do not give love. We were born to love. You might say that we are divinely created love machines. We function most powerfully when we are given love. The world has led us to believe that our well-being is dependent on other people loving us. But this is the kind of upside-down thinking that has caused so many of our problems. The truth is that our well-being is dependent on our giving love. It is not about what comes back, it is about what goes out. Alan Cohen. And that is the end of today's chapter. And really, really wonderful stuff. Like this chapter is so powerful. There's a few things that I want to touch upon. First, I'll start with earlier on in the chapter when Mr. Keaton is talking to the boys. he says to them about how all of these young men that they were looking at in the photograph were once in their shoes, and they all had aspirations and dreams based on what other people wanted them to do. Their parents wanted them to jump into a career that was highballing, like well paid, like financially they'd be well off, they'd be able to continue the family's wealth, and everything would be fantastic financially. But I really, really love what this is about, because it goes on to say how many of them really lived out their dreams. And this is really beautiful. If you really take a minute to look at this, how many of them really lived out their dreams? We're on a journey, and the average age, the life expectancy nowadays is about 60 to 70 years old, but if you work in hospitality, it's probably halved. But we're on this journey, this beautiful experience, and I can't think of nothing worse. I have a little girl coming up to 7 years old, and when people talk about what do you want her to be when she's older, what do you think she's going to be interested in, and all of that jazz, I really just want Frankie to be happy. Like, I don't care about what she does, like if she sweeps roads or she becomes a vet or she becomes a zoo ranger in somewhere in the rest of the world. I really don't care, as long as she's happy. How many people are working jobs and living lives that they're not really happy about? Like, it's the saddest thing for me. And I think largely there's a part of life where when you're coming out of high school, because my little sister's going through it now, she's doing her exams and everyone's shrouding her, like everyone's asking her, what are you going to do, what are you going to study, what are you going to go into further education, and it's just overwhelming. She doesn't know. And I think life's about, how do you know what you want in life until you know what you don't want in life, right? So you experience life, you find out what sucks, you stay away from that, and you try something else. And so many people are just working jobs that they don't want to work in, or careers that their parents put them in, and they're never happy. And happiness is really and truly the most important thing in life. So if you find yourself in a position now where you hate your life because you chose a career that your heart wasn't in, every second that goes past, you have a moment to change it and go after what you really want to do. And he mentions that as well, about how everybody has a kind of birthday card, something wonderful that they want to give to the world. We all came into this journey with a special little sparkle. We all have something within us, an avenue of creativity that we want to share with the world. But a lot of people are scared to do it because they don't know how it will work out financially. But imagine if for a second you like, it's like I said in the last chapter, how in any moment there's two things to focus on. You can focus on the lack or the abundance. You can focus on how it will feel if it went wrong, or you could focus on things working out. And imagine doing your dream job. Imagine working in a career that you love. I can't remember who said it, but there was a quote that I remember, is if you enjoy what you do at work, you will never work a day in your life. I didn't really do that quote justice, but it's something along those lines, is if you chase your passion, you'll never work another day in your life, because every day you'll just be filled with that satisfaction, and you'd feel very fulfilled. The next thing that I want to touch upon, it actually made me laugh when I was reading this chapter the other day. When he's approaching the girl that he fancies, he says, a voice from hell kept telling me that she would not like me, and that I had a lot of nerve asking her out. A voice from hell, that's such it's a curious way of describing when you're focused on things going wrong instead of focusing on things going right. Imagine you're approaching this situation, and we've all been there, where we've somehow accidentally fallen in love with our colleague at work or something like that, and for some reason whenever they're around you just go to jelly. You want to say something cool, but you end up looking like an idiot, and you've got this situation where you want her in your life, or you want him in your life, and you just don't know how to approach the situation because you're so focused on it going wrong and the fear of rejection. But imagine for a second that you envisioned asking her out. She blushing or he blushes and says, yes, that'd be wonderful. You go on a date. It goes amazingly well. And then you have a second date. And 10 years later, you're raising kids together. We very rarely spend time focusing on it working out. And when you focus on it working out, you can conjure a feeling. And it's that feeling that you want to bask in and spend your time in that, because it feels better. When you line up with the feeling of rejection, it feels doomy and gloomy, and that is not helping you whatsoever. I believe that this chapter focuses heavily around the idea of lining up with your desires against lining up with your fears. Fear is a choice. It is not something that exists outside of us. Fear is in our minds. I was flying to Spain a few years ago. One of my best friends, David, he had invited me to his hometown, Pego, in Alicante, near Alicante, about an hour away from Alicante. I think it's in the province of Alicante. And this is the first time I traveled for years, because since I was a kid, I was scared of heights, and planes really scared the life out of me. You couldn't drag me on one, honestly. You need to sedate me and carry me on. So he bought me a ticket for my birthday to go and see his family and spend 2 weeks in Spain. Really wonderful. One of the best times of my life. But I remember sitting in the airport 6 hours before the flight, because we messed up the times, so we got there at midnight and we had to wait 6 hours. And David was happy sleeping in the airport, but I was so petrified with fear. I remember just staring at the exit. Like, we was in a little cafe in Stansted, and I could see the exit from my seat. And when he was asleep, I legit was considering just grabbing my bags and going home. You know, that's a crazy thing to do. This guy's just bought me a ticket. He's going to accommodate me for 2 weeks. I'm only going to spend money on alcohol. And I'm considering just abandoning him in the airport. Like, that's how strong my fear was. And the closer the time got to the boarding time, I was sweating profusely. I was petrified, I'm not going to lie. Like, and I remember feeling in that moment that I was aligning with the fear, as opposed to everything going well. Like, we're going to land, it's going to be fine. I'm sure the pilot has no intentions of crashing today. He wants to make it home to his family. They're all professionals. More people, apparently, statistically, more people are likely to go in a car crash than in a airplane crash. But that fear is still there, right? So we eventually start boarding the plane. It was with Ryanair, so there was like 3 hour delays, you know how it is. And we got on the plane, and I realized that the plane's actually really quite thin, like where the window is, and it's really compact, and so many things could go wrong. Okay, so all of that started playing in my mind. And it wasn't till I started traveling more frequently with my friends, my best friends, that I was on a plane once again with Ryanair. But I traveled so much by this point, like a year later, I'd gone abroad like 9 times. And I remember there was a little guy next to me. I think he was Spanish. And I sat next to him, and he spent the whole flight kissing his crucifix, sweating, panicking, praying. If there was a little bit of turbulence, this guy would literally jump out of his skin. And I realized in that moment that how can there be two people? Because at this point now, I was just enjoying flying. I loved the feeling of flying. It was so relieving. I felt so at ease. And I realized in that moment that it's about energy and vibration. And when you learn to balance your energy, and you learn to see the good in everything, and you learn to expect wonderful things to work out for you, you put your faith in the universe and you let that fear go. And this other guy next to me was choosing to be fearful. He was focused on everything going wrong, and in every moment he was worried about something horrible happening. And I realized in that moment, it's all about how you find clarity of the mind so that you choose your thoughts and feelings. And at the end of the chapter, I'm going back to the chapter now. I just want to give you one more thing before I go. I know it's been 20 minutes so far, I do apologize. About giving love out. Like, we're here as vessels of love to give love out without worrying about what comes back. I agree with this, but I'd also like to just add on to it that I believe that this journey that we are on is all about discovery of self. I really believe that we need to just kind of work on ourselves and get ourselves to the point where, you know, when you can fall so heavily in love with yourself that you no longer care or worry about people liking you. When you love yourself so much that you're just enjoying your moments and enjoying life, the lovers will come. The guys will throw themselves at you. You'll be fighting them off with sticks, you know. Everything will work out beautifully, but you have to love yourself. When you're at a vibrational place of not loving yourself, how can you expect anyone else to love you? You know, they're the vibes you're putting out. You know, every time you look in the mirror and you think about that thing that's wrong with you, or you think about how you lack in certain areas or how you could be better, that's all hogwash. You really just have to fall in love with who you are, because you are who you are, and there's no one else like you. I think you are the only being in this whole universe with your DNA. I heard that somewhere. I think it was on a Brian Cox program. I love Brian Cox. I could listen to him all night long. But you are the only being in this universe with your DNA. You were created how you were created, and you are how you are. You are where you are. You have to fall in love with that, and then life will give you wonderful things. That's 21 minutes from me, so I'm very sorry for making your ears bleed. I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you don't stress, and take care of your moments.